When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Come on.
Welcome to Life Lab. This is George G, and the time is right. Welcome today's guest, strong and powerful Charlie Feng. Charlie, are you ready to do this?
Yes, it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks, George.
Excited to have you on. Charlie is an entrepreneur. He is an investor, a mentor. He and organizations he has worked with have funded over $2 billion across 5,000 companies. Charlie, again, I'm excited to have you on. Tell us a little about your personal life, some more about your work, and why you do what you do.
My background is I grew up in a kind of middle-class family, first-generation immigrant, and I learned about kind of, I guess, entrepreneurship or the idea that you can kind of build your own business sometime in college. Before that, I didn't really know it was something you can make a career out of. It was a thing. and I think that was the eye-opening moment when I realized that, you know, if you could build something that people want, or if you could build something that solves a particular problem, you could kind of make a living doing this. And I had a lot of fun doing that. A lot of fun just problem solving and taking something that I thought needed to be changed, or I wished something existed, and doing that. So a lot of my skill set is kind of self-taught, but kind of a mix between a bit of programming, kind of the data side, a bit of finance. That's kind of where I guess I was technically trained from a schooling college perspective, and product, which is kind of a bit of the intersection. We started building Clearco 6 years ago. That's the most recent company. Before that, I had a couple of companies, one in the AI space and the other one in the creator space. And we all the founders of Clearco, we were kind of repeat founders. And one of the lessons we learned from our previous experiences was that no one starts a business to go fundraise, right? You start a business to solve a problem. You start a business because you're passionate about something, but no one starts a business to look at accounting and the books all day. Yet most successful, you know, entrepreneurs, if you talk to them, they're like, yeah, I spend most of the day on the road fundraising or talking to investors. And that's kind of what we wanted to change a little bit. That's why we built Clearco. And as you said, so we do this in a non-dilutive fashion. We do this purely data-driven. We plug into data sources of companies. And it's very different from kind of traditional investing. It's more so more like a data-driven way to look at a business. And then we just automatically deploy capital or fund people if criteria are met.
Nice. What did your parents do? Or what do they do?
Yeah, both of my parents are scientists and they work for the government, and they've been doing kind of the same job for multiple decades now. And growing up as a kid, I looked up very much to my parents, and I was like, oh, I guess this is what you should do, right? Kind of thing. And I was very much of a math and science student kind of growing up in high school and all that. And I guess that didn't really change until college.
Got it. And so you recognize, oh, wow, there's an opportunity to be an entrepreneur, to make a living by solving problems and bringing cool things into the world. And you did that, and now you have, you know, funded $2 billion, probably way more than that at this point, yeah. But this massive number. It's fascinating. It's like when you're a parent and you come from, for lack of a better term, from nothing, and you become a wealthy person, how do you help kids to, or is it possible to help your children to have that same grittiness, work ethic? And I wonder if there's a similarity there between what you went through of starting from nothing, not from nothing, but becoming successful, and then helping other companies to get funded more easily. Do you see parallels there? See what I'm trying to ask?
Yeah, that's very interesting. Yeah, and you're right. Now we funded, I think, over 6,000 companies, $2.5 billion and such. And it's kind of growing. And in that regard, I think you're absolutely right. I don't have any kids yet, but something I do think about is because I do think that we're all products or byproducts of our surrounding, our history, you know, our interactions and all that, and a bit of a product of our history and our environment. And I think a lot about what made me who I am today, or why do I make certain decisions or think about certain things the way I think about today? And I think a lot of that comes from, my parents to thank for, right? Or whether it's my early mentors during college, or kind of friends, but most of all, back at its roots, it's your parents. And for me, I still remember that we would do price matching. When we first moved to Canada, and we were definitely not wealthy by any means, and I wouldn't even classify us as that, or even close to that today, very much middle class. And I remember kind of taking a 20-minute bus just so that we could get a banana that's like 2 cents cheaper at a different grocery store, right? And I think one of the things that I've come to appreciate a lot more, although I think the frugality is still kind of, baked into me, if you will, mm-hmm. I think a lot more about the time value of money, where the 20-minute bus ride might not be worth the 2 cents I'm going to save. Although if it's saving $2 or something, I don't know. But if it's a larger amount, maybe it's worth it, but probably not for the 2 cents banana anymore. As a result, I think when we built Clearco, we thought a lot about the best use of capital. So depending on what initiatives you're using it for, the best use of capital may not be equity capital. It may not be debt capital, and it may not be Clearco, kind of these alternative capital sources that you're seeing pop up. So we think about from a funding your business perspective, it really depends on what the purpose is. So if you're looking to develop a revolutionary technology, cure cancer, kind of R&D, equity capital makes a lot of sense, right? You're putting in money to invest into something that you probably won't see a payout, or even if there is a payout, a pretty binary 0, 1, 2, or 1 payout, probably in 5 or 10 years. And that's where risk capital makes a lot of sense. Once you kind of build more stability and you know that your business has, for every dollar you put in, you get $2 out, something like Clearco or something more structured probably makes a lot more sense. You don't want to give up as much of your upside or your own equity for that capital. So we think a lot about that. And that's how we also kind of, when we're deploying capital, recommend to our founders that we fund.
Nice. I appreciate that. So to sort of build on that question, when you are mentoring founders, as I know that's something that you do a lot of and something you're really passionate about, kind of you want to help give them advantages, but not give them an advantage that is going to make things too easy, or is that the wrong way to look at it?
I think it's something that I'm still kind of learning. I'm not that experienced as a mentor or advisor or as a coach by any means. I started doing it mostly because there were, she started out with some ex-employees of mine or ex-Clearco folks or friends that decided to start their own companies. And there were specific areas of expertise that I had, had the scar tissues or made a lot of mistakes doing so, and was able to help out. But I think one of the things I learned, kind of, George, to your point, over the years is that sometimes you do, maybe this is what you're alluding to, let people kind of fall and make their own mistakes, right? Because that's kind of how you'll learn. And as much as you tell someone what might happen, they still kind of need to try it out themselves. And I think I've come to appreciate that more, or recognize that a bit more. So a lot of what I think about when I'm kind of mentoring or advising companies is to give them more scenarios or my experiences of what happened to myself, but kind of let them make their own decisions, and maybe give them my framework of making how I made those decisions in my past when we, you know, did a partnership with a large company or when we made a certain sale that was very different. But kind of, you know, let them make their own mistakes, if you will.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. It's obviously going to be different for everybody and all that stuff. And you wish that human beings would take wisdom from experience, but oftentimes we do need to just figure it out on our own. In terms of, I'm just curious, now that you moved on from Clearco, how are you spending your time? What does a typical day look like?
Yeah, my typical day is it's slow. It's different. It's very different from the type of work I do, but I think I still spend a lot of time doing, I guess, what people might call work, but I find it quite fun, which is just reading and research, and a lot of reading, some writing more from a reflection perspective based on the reading, and then a lot of research on kind of what to build next. To building a new product within Clearco, or when we were building Clearco, right? The phases where you're trying to go from that 0-1, it's very much of a try to understand what the market looks like, talk to a lot of people, talk to a lot of smart people, and try to understand what are the potential problems that you could solve, and then you need to pick which one you want to tackle. So I'm kind of in this phase right now where try to take some time off and, you know, relax and detach a little bit. I think that's healthy from a kind of like a work-life balance perspective. And at the same time, when I do kind of spend my time on work, it's more so now it's like research and reading angle, learning new technologies and such.
Nice. So that idea of time off, and we've been talking a lot about self-care. It seems like it's just been sort of in the ether a lot lately. That wouldn't have made any sense to me, you know, 20 years ago. It makes more sense to me today. What do you think about that?
I think I couldn't agree more. Like I'd probably give you a very different answer if you were to ask me this question, you know, 5-10 years ago. And I think even over the last 2 years, both as a company, how Clearco has changed and changed me, as well as myself and how my outlook has changed quite a bit. So to give you a bit of kind of context or history, when we started the company, we were kind of 5-7 people in a condo, lived there, breathed the work, and it was very much, this is what we were doing. And as a result, a lot of the in-office culture carried on as we grew bigger. Now we're fully remote. We have team members kind of all over the globe. We have leadership in different countries and different places. So by default, it's fully remote now. And this happened in 2020 after the whole pandemic. And us learning, what does that mean? What are the new rituals you need to create? What are things that, for example, water cooler talks, or kind of like time, when you take time off in this new world, sitting at home and kind of a staycation is very different from kind of like if you stay at home, a Slack is still, or whatever messaging system you use is still kind of popping off, and you're still getting emails all day. You don't get that same effect as you did when you went on vacation and you physically didn't have Wi-Fi, right? That kind of thing. So these are things that I started to appreciate a lot more. And I think a lot about how to actually detach properly, right? To make the most of, because when you're trying to detach, you're trying to recharge yourself, you're trying to kind of self-care, both your body physically, but also your mind, right? Mentally. And that's something that, to be honest with you, I struggled with. And I think I recently even struggled with, because after leaving Clearco, I was like, okay, I'm going to take some time off and for myself and all that. And then I realized I just stayed at home and stared at a monitor all day. It didn't make much of a difference, right? So I'm trying to think about what are new mechanisms or new routines to get a bit of that mental self-care and break.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing, right? You're wired a certain way, and I think sometimes when we talk about work-life balance, that not everybody, our ideas of balance are different. And just because you perceive that, Charlie, if I perceive that you're working 18 hours a day, I would think, well, maybe that's a terrible thing, but maybe you have all the energy and that gives you energy and you really enjoy it. So it's a function of going back to maybe that time value of money thing we were talking about before, is taking a little bit of time off here and there. Is that actually going to be increasing my ability to effectively work and be more effective? Just all that.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think through ever since we went remote, I've also come to learn and appreciate that everyone's a little bit different, right? Everyone is has their own, the peaks of their day that they are most productive and times when they needed to be off. And at first I kind of wasn't used to it because I was thinking about, you know, from my own lens or my own perspective to say, oh yeah, no, I like to work these hours. But then I quickly realized that like the hours when I was working, some people were sleeping, some people wanted to, you know, they wanted to spend with their family, whatever it might be. And we started to develop a lot more of an asynchronous culture where I could post something, but I shouldn't be asking for an answer or asking for a meeting, but rather, you know, I put a question out there on the channel and someone else, when they're working or their productive time of the day, and they're answering themselves. And that created a lot better of a culture, I felt like, where people could kind of fully make it what they will. But it did really force us as a company to change how we approached working, because it used to be very much a synchronous culture where you sit down in a meeting, right? And that's how we started. When we first went from pandemic to the Zoom culture, it was just like as if every meeting turned into a Zoom meeting. So there wasn't really any benefits of being detached. We were just all staring at a computer screen, jumping, instead of jumping from office rooms, we would just jump from Zoom meetings to a different Zoom meeting. And I think we thought a lot more about kind of the work-life balance, but specifically around kind of what you mentioned around what is that time value of like what is your most productive time of the day, how to make the most use of everyone's happiness and time spent, and optimize the work routines more to adapt to that.
Is that is the ability to do that, it's based on trust and confidence that the folks you're working with are fully invested in wanting to work hard. It's just that they do things different than you do.
Yeah, I think it does definitely require a pretty high degree of trust, because you are believing that they shouldn't, well, if someone needs to take 18 hours to get the work done, great. And they want to work 18 hours, great. If someone wants to just put in 2 hours, but get the same deliverables done, that's also great, right? And it kind of makes the culture very much more of a, you measure not by kind of the inputs that people put in, but more by the outputs that people are coming out of. So much more results orientated, which I think is ultimately good at the end of the day.
Yeah, interesting. Different seasons of life, Charlie, just going through the maturation process, all this stuff.
Yeah, different, very much, I think over the last couple of years gave me a lot more perspective into both different types of working environments, as well as different types of what people prefer from kind of the, and I got to appreciate a lot more of different, my colleagues who had families versus my colleagues who are kind of traveling the world and living from different Airbnbs to different Airbnbs. Got to see kind of more firsthand and appreciate that a lot more. And tried that some of that myself as well. So that part was a very good experience.
I like it. Well, Charlie, people are ready for your difference-making tip. What do you have for them?
I think one of the biggest lessons I was reflecting on this, one of the biggest lessons I learned over the last, I'd say, year or so, similar to that vein of just different perspectives, is that everyone is the hero of their own journey. And everyone is kind of the main character of their own story. And I think it's oftentimes too easy to forget and think from my, like I made this mistake a ton of times when I think about not from my colleague's perspective, but thought from my perspective, like, oh, why shouldn't they like this? Or shouldn't they want this? Or I prefer this. But it's important not to forget that everyone is the hero of their own story. And you know, everyone's fighting a battle that you probably don't know about. And yeah, to remember that, that perspective. So that's kind of a big lesson that I learned through this kind of whole self-care as we transition from a very in-office culture to a fully remote culture and kind of working with a variety of different people.
Well, I think that is great stuff that definitely gets a come on. Charlie, thank you so much for coming on the show. Where can people learn more about you? How can they engage with you?
Well, George, thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure. They could follow me on Twitter. I'm starting to use that a little bit more. So that's Charlie C. Fang on Twitter. And yeah, on LinkedIn as well. People are more than happy to reach out and happy to chat.
Love it. Well, if you enjoyed this as much as I did, show Charlie your appreciation and share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas. Go to, or you can find Charlie on Twitter at Charlie C. Fang and find him on LinkedIn. I'll list both of those in the notes of the show. Thanks again, Charlie.
Amazing. Thanks so much, George.
And until next time, keep fighting the good fight. We are all in this together.